This conference is being recorded.
This is Don Hussig with Cancer Action Network. You're listening to Loving the Earth, Pollution Free Rising. Joining us today is a very, very special guest. Carl Grossman is a longtime Long Island journalist and author. He wrote and published the book, The Poison Conspiracy, in 1983. Good morning, Carl.
Good morning, Don.
Tell us everything more you want to tell us about yourself that I haven't, you know, touched upon.
Well, I've specialized in investigative reporting for, now over 40 years. I'm getting old, and I'm a professor at the State University of New York College at Old Westbury, where I teach investigative reporting. And one of the main areas of interest to me through the years has been environmental, energy, public health issues and how they connect. And in terms of your concern, the issue of cancer, that has been a special focus because what I've concluded, indeed I document in the book Poison Conspiracy, is that cancer is a largely environmentally caused disease. Indeed, I have a chapter in The Poison Conspiracy. It's headed Admitted Consequences. And I quote from a number of reports, including here's a 1980 report of the Presidential Toxic Substances Strategy Committee, concluding that, and I'm quoting from the report, environmental factors are significant in the great majority of cancer cases seen, perhaps 80 to 90%. Now, here they're talking about smoking, people creating their own pollution, but when you go beyond smoking, most of this stuff is involuntary. We're being impacted by these terrible carcinogens, and what we have to do, in my judgment, is to prevent these assaults, to prevent these insults, thus the issue of cancer action is very close to my heart.
You've given us a bit of a window on why you wrote this important book, but is there any more, you know, just give us a little more of, you know, what motivated you to sit down, do all that huge amount of research, all that investigative reporting, and, you know, produce this book that's just so filled with government documents, with hearing testimony, with, you know, statements by various parts of government. How did you, you know, what brought you to that, you know, that path of writing that book?
Well, Ronald Reagan had just become elected president, and it was clearly obvious that he was putting foxes to guard various hen houses. Indeed, the dust jacket of the book, the back of the book, and it's actually a page from the book, I cite some of the people he appointed. For example, here to EPA, Rita LaValle, she was put in charge of the Superfund waste program, and her background, PR person for Aerojet General Corporation, a chemical aerospace conglomerate involved in hazardous waste dumping and pollution of water in California, Dr. John Hardhunter, longtime representative of opponents of restrictions on pesticides and scientific advisor of the industry-financed American Council on Science and Health. He became, under Reagan, assistant administrator for pesticides and toxic substances. And it goes on and on and on. I mean, it's just utterly outrageous, the people who Reagan selected to protect us. But what I did find in that goes back many years now. It goes back more than 25 years. But what I have found in doing the research of the book, into the book, is that was nothing new. In fact, that pattern continues today, and was the way it was way back in the beginning. It's an outrage. It's a scandal, and as a result, People are suffering. People are getting sick. I note in the book how cancer was the number 8 fatal disease in this country, in the United States, in 1900. And by the 60s, 70s, 80s, it was number 2. It's going to, they say, soon be number 1 over heart disease. And as I say, cancer is a largely environmental disease caused by toxins thrown into the environment. We have to focus on preventing that from happening.
And then we come to this point that is made very strongly in your book, and as you say, continues to be the situation. How do we prevent it from happening when our government is basically, certainly, totally, basically, completely under the control of the very corporations that do the poisoning?
Yeah, well, I think, first off, and this is my area, I'm not an organizer, I'm not involved in politics in terms of being a participant. I'm a journalist, and the main mission I have is to get the information out, and hopefully if people are armed with the facts, if they're aware, if they know about that and other reports, for example, I cite in the poison conspiracy, they'll stand up and demand that change be made. It's to me an utterly outrageous situation where you have it's mass death. I mean, the rates of cancer, fatal cancer in our society today are skyrocketing. And actually, since the book came out in the early 80s, industry has really done a propaganda job to try to convince people that the causes of cancer have to do with diet and lifestyle and genetics. They've tried to very aggressively bring it away from these causes of cancer. I think it's imperative that people understand the causes of cancer and understand this is a life and death situation. Stand up and demand that this pattern of us not being protected because of, and conspiracy is a strong word. I mean, community of interest might be a more palatable word for people, but I found in my research that what the situation here is conspiratorial. I mean, let me go back, if I could, to a physician who was highly responsible. He and Upton Sinclair, a muckraker and investigative journalist who wrote The Jungle, was equally responsible. But between Upton Sinclair and Dr. Harvey Washington Wiley, we got the Pure Food and Drug Act of 1906. And this is really the first federal law protecting us from poisons in food. Well, Dr. Wiley, in the end, and there's a postage stamp for Dr. Wiley as the father of the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration. I mean, his work, he worked with the Department of Agriculture, but his work led to the creation of the Food and Drug Administration. In 1912, he resigns from government service, and he writes himself a book called The History of a Crime Against the Food Law, and he writes about how the Pure Food and Drug Act of 1906 was perverted. And I'm just quoting here from his book, there was a distinct tendency to put regulation and rules to the enforcement of the law into the hands of industries engaged in food and drug activities. I consider this one of the most pernicious threats to pure food and drugs. Business is making rapid strides in the control of all our affairs. And this is 19, it's never advisable to surrender food and drug control to business interests. And this is 1912. We're talking, it's 2010. And it's the same deal. I mean, there's a thing called BPA, a substance called BPA, which is used and plastics. And the impacts of BPA are extremely serious all over the world. There have been these, including in our neighboring Canada, efforts to stop the use of BPA. And here in the United States, there's been some local efforts, some important local efforts. But what the industry, the plastics industry, likes to point to is the Food and Drug Administration giving BPA clearance and not finding these linkages to all kind of diseases. So the protection of the poisoners by those in government who are supposed to be protecting us just continues and continues. You know, again, as to what people can do about it, I mean, the first step, obviously, is to become informed. And after that, take political action. Make sure you work with organizations like your own, like Cancer Action, to deal with the causes of particularly cancer and other environmentally caused diseases, and stop this this murder. It's truly murder.
I agree with you so fully, and yet, how can it be that, like you say, it's been so many years, a very, very many decades, you know, lots of time for people to change their minds, lots of time for people to see this, read your book, read what, you know, Dr. Wiley wrote, and yet we're still in a situation where we can try to bring these changes, and it seems like the industry is so much more powerful. For example, when you wrote that book, The Poison Conspiracy, in 83, then the Harvard Center for Cancer Prevention, Harvard Medical School, started publishing a series of reports titled The Harvard Report on Cancer Prevention. That report, the first volume, was about the causes of cancer. And the conclusions, the clearly set forth conclusions of that report are that pollution, all pollution, whether it be, you know, air pollution, water pollution, food contamination, soil contamination, that all the poison that is in the earth and the air, you know, this whole environment that we have to survive in, that all that causes no more than, it was 2 to 5% of all cancer deaths. You know. That kind of, you know, misinformation coming from a prestigious institution like Harvard has caused some people to be deceived in this, because people don't have the time. They're too busy making a living to read the scientific research articles that are constantly being published about the links between pollutant exposure, you know, exposure to pollution, whether it's dioxins in the food we eat or, you know, some of these volatile organic compounds like the TCE in the water we drink, or the many particulates and sooty particulates in particular, which include the polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons that are known to cause cancer. Breathing this in the air that we just breathe on a day in and day out basis. People aren't reading those reports, and they just can't keep up with it. Our group tried to educate on this. You tried to educate on it. We see that industry is gradually gaining more control here. That U.S. Supreme Court decision where corporations are now considered to have the rights of individuals, and now that they're, you know, it used to be, I remember when people were talking about publicly financed campaigns. It was a beautiful idea that might have fixed some of these problems. But we see our country going in the very opposite direction and now making it, the way I interpret it and the way many other people interpret that Supreme Court ruling, is that there now are no limits on how much money corporations can give to political campaigns. And we already had a government that was totally owned by industry before that ruling. It's, you know, it's inconceivable to look into the future and think what that might mean for all of us. 1912, isn't that when you said that Wiley book was published?
Yeah.
Okay, here we are nearly 2012, nearly 100 years later. You know, when is the time for revolution? You know, what is the time for people waking up and saying, okay, we don't have a country. We just have a bunch of corporations that want to make money, and based upon their very definition, they don't care. The one thing they're lacking as far as human, you know, issues go, they might have our rights, but they certainly don't have any caring for suffering, and they don't have any caring for poisoning, and they don't have any caring for cheating or deceiving or anything like that. So, you know, why do we keep putting up with this? I feel pretty strongly about it. I feel like that we should take whatever action is necessary to bring this to an end. Now that we've all, you know, that a significant number of us have been educated about these problems, and we certainly did a great job in doing some educating, and we're trying, but we're a small group, and so we do some information tables at some high schools and get some town boards to pass resolutions about dioxins in the food supply. It's just not working because in the big picture, looking at it from, you know, standing apart from it and looking at it, it's clear that corporations are winning and we're losing. And who wants to live in a, you know, a country that will allow poisoning to take place on this scale for this long? And to have such a horrible result of it, it's not just that, well, we kept poisoning each other, but we still haven't figured out, you know, what that leads to. Well, we know what it leads to. So much science has been published, all this dioxin research literature on, you know, exposure and cancer, all this BPA literature, the polybrominated diphenyl ethers, these flame retardants, are now being clearly set forth as something that imposes cancer risk in animals, and that we're getting exposed to more than anybody else on Earth. It's in our bodies. It's been, you know, it's the data exists that demonstrates that Americans have higher levels of PBDEs in their tissue than any other country on Earth. And it's because of that book, you know, it's because of the substance that you wrote about in The Poison Conspiracy. What are you going to do?
Well, I don't know if significant numbers of people know about this. I think the propaganda program has been very effective. For example, after I wrote the book, and I've written articles about this, I ran into a guy, his name was Sibison, and he was a public relations fellow for the EPA. And he told me that one of the things, I wish I would have mentioned it in the book, that one of the things that happened when Reagan got in was no longer could EPA issue a press release using the words cancer-causing in front of chemical. In other words, it was a 1984 thing, and it was about 1984 when this occurred. The idea was to hide the reality. As I say, with the industry, their big crusade has been to try to tie cancer with genetic lifestyle, diet,
exactly.
Women eating sour cream, that's the problem. With the people that they have in government or at universities, you know, some universities get a lot of money from industry, and there's kind of a tie-in there. And it's truly a very conspiratorial situation. They would hide the reality from everybody. You look at media, and I'm a professor of journalism, and corporate media has not stressed the tie-in adequately at all. I mean,
they refuse to cover it.
Now and then there'll be a piece on 60 Minutes on one of these toxins, but people don't have, I don't think, a sense of the pattern. The notion, too, with cancer is it's longevity. People have to die of something. So as people get older, die older, they end up dying of cancer. I deal with that, in fact, in the book, The Poison Conspiracy, and spend several pages examining In fact, some of this work was done by the New York Public Interest Research Group way back then, looking at longevity, and is that the key factor here for people dying of cancer? And they found that it's not. There's this big increase in the post-World War II years with the wide-scale use of pesticides, plastics in our society. Nuclear technology is very important here to mention, too. Radiation, radioactivity. In fact, there's a synergy. And Rachel Carson in Silent Spring writes about this, between insults by radiation, radioactivity, and chemical pollutants. 2 and 2 don't equal 4, it turns out. There's a synergy which causes both to become worse because of them being together. So I think if you asked the average person, I mean, a dear friend of a father or a friend of ours, there was a wake for him Sunday. What was the disease? Cancer. His daughter, who's not that old, she's in her 40s, she has cancer. Her husband, who was in fact my closest friend in college, died last year, cancer. A lot of these cancers, well, my friend Ed, prostate, his wife now is widow Laura, breast, her father, prostate. And a lot of these agents attack reproductive systems. That's why cancer is particularly rampant. Prostate cancer, breast cancer, testicular cancer, ovarian cancer. And between the endocrine disruptors and the radioactivity and the pollution of our water, half the water in this country is not suitable for drinking. I mean, you throw it all together. I'm just looking here. There's another report I cite in my book. And again, that chapter, Admitted Consequences, what I end up doing, and the book I think would be helpful. People should, you can still find it used on Amazon.com or one of these web servers that provide for the purchase of used books. What I did, this is before people did books with computers, that you laid out in those days, this is in the early 80s, and before that, books on, it was photo offset process. So what I did was, with a scissor, cut out sections of reports, these government reports that I cite, most done in the 70s. I mean, Jimmy Carter, people can scream and yell about him, and probably should on many levels. I mean, he claimed to be a nuclear engineer because he worked with Hyman Rickover in the Navy on nuclear stuff, and he was not good on nuclear. But he was, for some reason, in the late 70s, interested in the cancer connections, and he impaneled these various groups. Here's one, the Task Force on Environmental Cancer and Heart and Lung Disease, and it was composed of EPA, National Cancer Institute, National Institute for Occupational Safety, you know, a bunch of federal agencies. And I'm just reading from the report. Right from the top, the environment we have created may now be a major cause of death in the United States. Cancer, heart, and so forth and so on. And again, I don't think people are familiar with it. But when I wrote this book, I recall, too, doing interviews in 83. The publisher somehow was able to get some of the media to do interviews with me, and people who interviewed me said, you're claiming this conspiracy with Rita LaValle and Robert Perry and John Todd, all these people. They kind of were skeptical. Then the EPA scandal, it was a big scandal at that point, broke with Rita LaValle ending up before Congress and then finally through the criminal system. And Ann Gorsuch, she was the head of EPA, ending up in big trouble and for covering up, essentially, for industry. And then I had a lot of interviews then, and people kept asking, how'd you know? This is, you know, people in media who were so skeptical. I mean, it was so obvious. You look at these people's backgrounds, then you see what they're being appointed to. It was clear that a cover-up was occurring here, a cover-up of poisons in our environment and a conspiracy to not protect us. Another point, too, is that people sometimes think politically that if we vote, well, the Republicans are worse, the Democrats are okay, maybe. But some of the people that I speak to in the book, and these are honest people who work for EPA, in particular Hugh Kaufman, who was a whistleblower, a very important figure in that Ann Gorsuch in Burford. She was in her background, she was a lawyer for the telephone company and then became a state legislator in Colorado who consistently supported polluting industries and was pivotal in killing Colorado efforts to deal with toxic waste. Well, who becomes the head of EPA under Reagan? This Ann Gorsuch, who then became Ann Burford, must have married a Mr. Burford. And Hugh Kaufman was terrific during that period of blowing the whistle on what was happening, and so was Bill Sandor, both who went back to the origins, the beginnings of the EPA in the 70s. And here's just a quote from Kaufman. When you have the largest companies in the world pressuring the federal government, a situation results which pretty much wouldn't change from administration to administration. And Bill Sandor says, I'm quoting here from my book, depending on the federal government to regulate things is absolutely worthless. They just make matters worse. In fact, one of the things Sandor points out is that putting in all kind of regulations really ends up to be terribly ineffective, because what it does is that these foxes within the government just give these permits to these companies to pollute. And as Sandor says, Sandor was the chief of EPA's hazardous waste implementation branch. It gives license to continue, these companies to continue to pollute, and actually makes it easier for them to continue to pollute by doing it under federal auspices. So, and in any case, if people think that Tweedledee is better than Tweedledum, it's not been the case. I mean, they're a little better, but not much better. And just to think that that's going to provide the relief is a fantasy. Sure. I think what we have to have is action. And again, I'm a journalist. I'm not an organizer. But we have to have action from the grassroots. People have to be empowered with the information, have to understand, and have to demand that a change comes. I mean, you were talking about the EPA before. For those listening who aren't familiar with it, it's an acronym for biphenyl A. It's put into these plastics, let me quote. I'm looking at an article. It's on the internet. Just put BPA in my name, and here's an article that I wrote last year, quoting an honest university professor, University of Missouri professor of biological sciences, Frederick von Saal. And he was critical in exposing BPA, saying it's not just what you eat, it's what you eat out of. BPA poses a threat and stands to shorten the lives of the chemical industry. It's going to end up like the tobacco companies sued into the Stone Age. Again, for those who aren't familiar, BPA is used to harden plastics and also uses a coating inside cans and beverages and food. 3 million tons of this BPA stuff are manufactured annually, and there's really no need for it. There has been action. For example, where I live on Eastern Long Island, the Suffolk County Legislature when the chemical industry people came and said, oh, the FDA says it's fine, don't worry about it, they passed a ban on this is mostly bottles for children, baby bottles and stuff, made with BPA. But it has to be a federal ban on BPA. And again, these protectors at FDA and EPA and these other federal and state And let me say, international agencies have to be brought in line. They have to do what they're supposed to do, protect us. Speaking of up the regulatory food chain, on the international level, you have the International Atomic Energy Agency, which still says only 57 people died as a result of the Chernobyl nuclear plant accident. This is an agency that was created in the 50s, essentially as a mirror of our Atomic Energy Commission. This was during the Atoms for Peace dopiness of the 50s, and the UN created an agency mirroring our Atomic Energy Commission. Well, in the 70s, our Atomic Energy Commission, which had the twin roles of promoting nuclear power and somehow regulating it, was eliminated because it was in conflict of interest. But the International Atomic Energy Agency, which has the same conflicting dual missions, lives on, and it pushes nuclear power and does all it can to cover up on the... there's been a recent report done by the New York Academy of Sciences, actually published it. Dr. Alexei Yablokov out of Moscow did, with some other scientists, an analysis of the health data regarding the Chernobyl accident. And this is just out, and they find that the death toll from cancer between 1986, the date year of the accident, and 2004, wasn't 57 like the IEA would claim. It's more like 875,000. Wow. There's a big difference between 875,000 people dying of cancer and 57. And then meanwhile, there's this arrangement, and just Google my name and put in IAEAWHO, an arrangement between the International Atomic Energy Agency, I've written about this, and the World Health Organization, under which any time the World Health Organization does something, looks into something that involves radioactivity and health, in fact, radioactivity, period, it has to collaborate with the International Atomic Energy Agency in reporting about it. Outrageous.
Outrageous.
But as I say, from the very local, though sometimes people can have some control locally, but I'm talking about health departments that are concerned about blowing the whistle on toxic facilities in an area because maybe affect tourism or affect the economy, to state health and environmental organizations, to the federal level, it's an absolute outrage. But, for example, the Toxic Substances and Control Act was passed, this goes way back, over 30 years ago, and they were supposed to, this is EPA under the Toxic Substances Control Act, look into the potentially hazardous chemicals that are trafficked in our society. And we're talking about, at this point, about 75,000 such chemicals. And they've had years and years to look into these chemicals, and now we're talking about maybe 60 or 70 out of the 60 or 70,000 that they've done analysis of. I mean, it's just, it can make you sick, and it makes a lot of people sick. And an end has to be put. I mean, what you're saying, what you're pointing to in terms of political action and your frustration vis-a-vis the media and vis-a-vis the political system so dominated by the people who do the poisonings, these corporations. Though they're not the only ones. I should note, too, that government entities, particularly the National Nuclear Laboratories, their facilities, they're all Superfund sites, Los Alamos National Laboratory, Brookhaven National Laboratory, and so forth. What a mess they've made, or the military. I mean, the biggest polluter, it said, in the United States is the U.S. military. So it's not just corporations looking at bottom line, looking to make a profit and not giving a damn how many people die in the process, but these huge government bureaucracies and laboratories and other governmental entities who are so irresponsible. So the word inconsiderate is not strong enough. I mean, they just don't give a damn about life.
It almost seems that that is this other element here. There's this greed that, you know, is uncontrolled and will poison just to make money. But then, as you're pointing out here, there's also this matter of not giving a damn, you know, just being inconsiderate, uncaring, you know, lacking in concern for these more sensitive matters of clean, healthy environment. So, you know, like you're saying, the military, which is not trying to make a profit, but they just, this is just the way they are, you know, the kind of people that are involved in that kind of a part of our society, and the in these national laboratories. It's certainly concern raising. I want to get back for a minute to the BPA. We, you know, we're this cancer prevention group, so we spend a lot of time discussing how to reduce exposure to these chemicals that cause cancer, and the BPA is high on everybody's radar screen. So we came across this information that the BPA was a coating on thermal paper. We researched that some, determined that Walmart and these other, it appears that truly all retailers use cash register tapes that if they're shiny, if they're slick, if they have this, if they don't look like, you know, old-fashioned paper, they're not. They're coated with BPA. Walmart has actually stated that their cash register tapes are coated with BPA. Mm-hmm. And then the end of the story is, you know, when we ask them to educate their employees, their cash register operators, educate them about the adverse health effects of being exposed to BPA, and then let the employees make up their minds of whether they want to continue just casually exposing themselves by handling this paper all day long. You know, I feel ill at ease with just taking that paper from their hands and, you know, putting it in my wallet or putting it in the grocery bag. They handle it all day long, and they don't know anything about the adverse health effects of BPA. And Walmart just, their end of the story for Walmart is, you know, you've asked, you know, Cancer Action has requested that we educate our employees and offer them the option of wearing plastic gloves. Our answer to that is FDA approves BPA. But that just, that can't be the end of the story because, like you say, the fox is guarding the chicken coop. FDA looked only at papers that were produced, you know, research papers on BPA that were produced by industry. Recently, they've been challenged in having done so, and now they're looking again, and I don't know, maybe they've made some, you know, preliminary determinations that they're starting to feel concerned about the BPA. But these people are every day handling all that paper. So I'm thinking, just go there and start handing out, you know, a little bookmark or something brief that spells out this scientific basis for being concerned about the BPA exposure. And there's certainly plenty of it. Doug, that professor that you were talking about, Dr. Von Selm, he certainly is a great authority. And so is Theo Colborn with the Endocrine Disruption Exchange. The papers that I've seen, you know, that those cancers you were talking about, those reproductive cancers, well, in the rat studies, the in utero, you know, the gestational exposure to this bisphenol A at minute quantities causes the female offspring to be predisposed to increased breast cancer susceptibility, and it causes the male offspring to be predisposed to increased prostate cancer susceptibility. Dioxins cause the same thing with the females. I'm not so sure about the males, but certainly with the females, in utero dioxin exposure predisposes the female offspring to increase susceptibility to breast cancer. When we see these results in animals, and we've nailed it down to being caused by these endocrine disrupting chemicals and specific ones and in specific quantities, and then we see these same results in people, it's so unreasonable not to take action and precaution, thinking, you know, okay, here's the problem. Sure, it's not proven. We can't dose people with dioxin or bisphenol A for that matter and then, you know, look at the health outcome with their offspring. They live too long. It's unethical. None of this is going to work. It's just dumb. Well, it's not dumb. It's being willing to not have the character to stand up against greed to let these kind of things continue. Where, you know, there's no character pill. You know, how are we going to get, you know, a result of good character, which is necessary. You have to have good character to take these stands and oppose industry. I was at a county legislature meeting last night. All we were doing was trying to get a resolution through our St. Lawrence County legislature, which is the heart of dairy farming in New York State. There's more cows in St. Lawrence County than there are people. Dairy farming is huge here. We were trying to get our county legislature to call upon the New York State Department of Health to review the scientific literature of dioxin exposure and cancer risk, and also of this bisphenol A and the PBDEs. We're asking New York State DOH to, they have epidemiologists, they have a Center for Environmental Health, they make the claim that they do an ongoing review of the scientific literature, and yet New York State DOH doesn't have one word for the public about dioxins in the commercial food supply. They have a chemicals in sports fish and game advisory that advises not to eat fish from the Great Lakes or the or other freshwater bodies in New York State, because for, this is for women and girls of childbearing age because of the dioxin contaminant, but not a word about the dioxin contaminant in the beef and the pork and the poultry and the fish, you know, the farm-raised fish and the marine fish and all the, and the milk and the cheese and the, you know, anything that's got the fat is where the dioxin is, you know, present. And so we've argued with New York State DOH since before 2003. They must produce some kind of educational document that they would also disseminate that advised parents and especially parents of young children, New Yorkers, anybody really, it's not just a matter of youth. Nobody wants to get cancer from being exposed to dioxin. So the battle goes on. We had one county legislator at that committee meeting yesterday afternoon in the town of Canton, county seat of St. Lawrence County, while this dairy farming goes on. He said Cancer Action New York says to not eat agricultural products. Just this blank, you know, blank statement, you know, don't eat agricultural products. I'm thinking, what are we supposed to eat? You know, what are people eating? We say to eat little or no food containing animal fat because it's a great way to avoid exposure to dioxins, PBDEs, these perfluorinated compounds. They're in meat, not in, in the fat, but in the meat. Just a whole litany of polluting carcinogens that are either known human carcinogens or at least known animal carcinogens and suspected of being human carcinogens. In 2010, we can have a county legislator that will just stand up and, you know, make that kind of statement, you know, and he, thank God he wasn't successful. There are other legislators who are university professors and more thinking people that are willing to say Cancer Action is really asking for a small thing here, and it's so reasonable. You know, why shouldn't the New York State Department of Health says they do this? Why shouldn't they just be asked to do it? Because it needs to be asked again, because Cancer Action has asked them to do this for years, and they say to us, we don't want to tell people about dioxin in the milk and the meat. And there's only one reason for that. The administrations, whether they be Democrat or Republican, the governor's office doesn't want to deal with the pushback from the food industry. You know, it takes a lot of integrity, a lot of character to deal with that. They don't have it. They demonstrate they don't have it with all the scandals they're involved in all the time. It truly almost seems like we got a bunch of people here that shouldn't be in control of anything, let alone our health and our environment and our, you know, our honor and our country and all these important things. And justice, you know, it seems like everything is out the window for the dollar. And like you say, it's not just the dollar, it's just don't give a damn. That's in there, too. I'm glad you kind of brought that up, because I'll never forget it now. Well, I keep coming back to what are we going to do?
The other point I think that's very important for people to understand is that this is all unnecessary. I mean, if certain things involve danger, if you go from St. Lawrence County to where I am on Long Island in your car, or in an airplane even, or in a train, there's a certain, I mean, the odds are very low, but there's a certain amount of danger that you'd have to face.
Yes.
This poisoning of our country and of the planet is completely unnecessary. I have found, doing this kind of work for now many, many years, that virtually every polluting process and product need not be. I mean, I'll give you a couple of examples. And in fact, this is in the book, The Poison Conspiracy. I write about the effort in the 1970s to outlaw PCBs, polychlorinated biphenyls, which were ubiquitous in all over the world, and particularly here. Monsanto was the sole manufacturer from 1928 until finally late 70s when PCBs were outlawed. And the effort to outlaw them begins with some PCBs getting mixed in with rice oil in Japan, 6 people dying, 1,000 people becoming ill, and EPA was just created, and then there began this big effort in the U.S. to deal with PCBs, this toxic substance that was in, I mean, all over. If you look at a fluorescent, in fact, you have an old one around, if you look at an old fluorescent fixture, you'll see a ballast in the fixture.
Right.
That contains PCBs. It was used as an insulating fluid, or on train tracks, you would see big, not just a small little container of PCBs, but big transformer systems loaded with many, many gallons of PCBs. And there was other purposes that PCBs were used for. But after the Yusho incident in Japan, there was the effort in the U.S. To ban PCBs, and Monsanto, in fact, I reprint one of the press releases they issued, and again, I do it by cutting it out with a scissor, pasting it down on the flat from which the various flats from which the book was published, so people, I wasn't quoting per se, I mean, I do quote here and there, but in a lot of these cases, I actually provide facsimiles so people could see the lies, they could see the deceit themselves by seeing the actual documents. And one of the documents is a Monsanto press release claiming that industrial society cannot continue without the use of PCBs. That's why they can't be outlawed. Well, in fact, they were outlawed in this country. And it seems to me the industrial society that was created has gone on without much of a blip. I mean, it just continues relatively unabated. And what's being used to substitute for PCBs? Basically mineral oil. I mean, not kind of space-age substance. It's mineral oil, which is being used as an insulating fluid now. So there was never a need to use this cancer-causing substance, PCBs, which, again, millions upon millions of tons of this stuff was produced. And still around. I mean, any old ballast or transformer thrown into a dump, the metal will rust away over the years, and the PCBs are going to get into our water. I mean, it's going to go on with PCBs for centuries, the poisoning of our nation and the world by PCBs. Or to take, this is a somewhat humorous example, here where I live on Long Island, there was an effort by the Suffolk County Legislature to outlaw the use of polystyrene, people call it styrofoam. Dow objects to that. They say styrofoam is their trademark name and so forth for polystyrene. But in any case, to ban it in food packaging. And the folks, the suits from McDonald's came down to the Suffolk legislature and said that, you know, unless we had these styrofoam clamshells that the hamburgers were put into, the Big Mac was put into, the Big Mac as we know it would no longer exist. We wouldn't be able to keep the hamburgers warm. Well, in the end, Suffolk County, Long Island, banned the use of polystyrene or styrofoam clamshells. And the Big Mac continues to exist. I mean, you can go to McDonald's around here, and you can still get a Big Mac. So bottom line, whether it's nuclear power or PCBs, or styrofoam clamshells for hamburgers, you don't need these things. They're a safe, clean substances which are in harmony with nature. There's, other than to profit with money or power, the people behind these toxic substances and toxic enterprises, they are not needed. And I think people have to understand that, and I wish media, I've tried to do a lot of work on that issue to explain to people that the poisoning is not necessary, that we could have a fine life without eating, you were talking about agricultural products, poison food, organic farming, and I have a chapter in my book about organic farming.
Yep.
How it, in fact, is as practical as chemical farming.
Right.
And indeed, chemical farming now, with the price of oil rising, with the various pests becoming resistant to the various pesticides, so they got to keep going from this pesticide to that pesticide, so forth. And so, organic farming can provide all the food. Speaking of Google, just suggest to listeners, go to YouTube and just put my name and put organic farming, and you'll see a TV show I did about a year or two ago on can organic farming feed us? And the answer is emphatically yes. And I interview various people in organic farming and just look into the issue of whether it can be done, whether we could we could grow food without these terribly poisonous chemicals that are being used on the land and in the food itself. So again, it's I quote George Wald, a biology professor at Harvard, in my book on my first book on nuclear power. I've done several. Cover up what you're not supposed to know about nuclear power. And Professor Wall says that if there was this huge media heading for the Earth, and you know we face mass extinction, we face enormous destruction, and there's nothing we could do about it. He says, well, we could go out in the street, and we could, you know, for the time we have left, we could just celebrate or enjoy ourselves. I'm paraphrasing what Dr. Wall said, but with this stuff, I mean this preventable stuff.
Exactly.
We have to stop it. We have to stop it being produced. We have to not just regulate it. So, like Bill Sanjour was saying, you could give some company as what they call a speedies permit. You know, a permit to just allow continual outpouring of these
elimination.
We have to stop the production of these things, and we have to say no to the poisoners.
That is well taken. And I'm just hoping that somehow enough of us saying no will make a difference. I wonder, because I wasn't really, you know, with it enough, and I wasn't old enough really to be keeping track, but weren't there some these kind of national war against cancer kind of marches and all this kind of fairly large numbers getting out and expressing their concern about these things? Did that take place? It seemed like I just got these slight vibrations of, you know, having noticed something about this war on cancer that was supposed to take place back in the 70s and how that was, you know, going to solve the cancer problem. Here we are, like 2010, and I think it's worse. You know,
it's
worse.
It's going to be
certainly more cancer. There's no doubt about there's more cancer, and that's the bottom line.
It's to be number one. They're talking 10 years, maybe 5, 10, 15 years. Again, surpassing heart disease as being the major cause of death, in the United States. So, the effort was really perverted, and the deal was, you know, we're going to find a cure. There's an excellent organization here on Long Island, which has a fine website too. Karen Joy Miller is its leader. And it comes out of the Huntington Breast Cancer Action Coalition. And the title of the group, the organization, it's a national organization and movement now. It's called Prevention is the Cure. And unfortunately, that message was subverted by those who would just love to continue on their merry, toxic ways. And then say, well, if we can figure a cure, then we could we don't have to worry about radioactivity. We don't have to worry about these toxic chemicals in our food and so forth. And that's just such baloney. We have to, I think, just straighten this whole thing out. And there are indications. I mean, what we've been talking about has been at a very negative level about the United States doing so little to protect us. But like in Europe, in recent years, there's been a real major effort to deal with toxic chemicals. There's in Europe, there's been a great effort in recent years to make people aware of the connection between pollution and cancer. So there's been some kind of bright spots. But in the United States of America, as you complain, these polluting industries are enormously powerful, and since the days of George Harvey Washington Wiley, they have shaped federal government policy, and it's just outrageous.
I have to say, Carl, that I am not able to, you know, I think about this a lot, and yet I feel like there's this wall. I just don't seem to be able to conceive of how to, sure, I can, you know, what we're saying about, say, organic farming, for example. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people go into organic farming, a lot of people want to buy organic food, a lot of organic farming gets done, but at the same time, there's all this commercial agriculture, this pesticide-based poisoning kind of agriculture going on, and then there's the tar sands activity of, you know, getting this dirty oil, then there's the shale gas of getting the dirty gas, then there's the companies that keep coming up with new chemicals, and I think we're going to just keep seeing, you know, pretty much this movement in the direction that, you know, we have been, you know, unhappy about it moving in, this direction of more cancer, because it's all about power. If, you know, these people have been becoming, you know, the people that do the poisoning and make the money of it, have been becoming more powerful forever, basically. You know, it's just, that's kind of the story of mankind, that they, you know, just figured out ways of making money, and then they used it to make more money, and then there was the chemical industry developed, and it's been going on for hundreds of years. And if that power continues, then certainly much of what that power does will be done, and we will have these negative results as a result of that. Isn't it? The only thought that ever comes to my mind, truly the only thought that ever comes to my mind, is that you take whatever action is necessary to stop the abuse of power from existing, you know, from doing what it does, from existing. You know, it isn't. I'm this nonviolent person. I feel that Jesus was probably one of the most wonderful people, or gods, or, you know, whatever people would think, that he was certainly a very wonderful example of love and positivity. But there is this matter of that there certainly is evil in the world, and there's good in the world. And if the evil is causing a tremendous, unbelievable amount of harm, what would be wrong with just stopping the evil by just basically getting rid of it? Is the only, you know, that's the only way you stop something like that. Is that true?
Well, you know, it's you were talking from your Christian perspective.
Well, see, I'm not Christian. I'm not Christian, but I believe
Jewish,
in it's a good thing.
And the most, well, it says, in the Jewish culture, a term that is widely used, frequently used, is l'chaim. It's to life, and life is the most important thing. And I think we have to reconstruct our world to understand that. I mean, talking about pro-life, I mean, they talk to these anti-abortion people that they're pro-life. I mean, this, what we've been talking about is truly pro-life, to stop the poisoning and to stop the diseases, the illnesses caused by the poisoning. I mean, what's happening is that a monkey wrench has been thrown into nature, and nature is kicking back, and it's all life affected. I mean, I remember doing an interview with Theo Kohlberm when she first wrote her book, Our Stolen Future, about endocrine disruptors. And where they first picked it up is in amphibians and stuff. I mean, in certain water bodies where these endocrine disruptors, these chemicals, which are ubiquitous in plastics and so forth, were used, suddenly it wasn't 50-50 male and female. It was like, you know, 98% female, or you know, it just threw, again, a monkey wrench into nature, which was first seen among other animals, and now it's gotten to, well, just now, for decades now, people have become huge victims, and as I say, we have to stop it. There's several levels. One is education, and that really is not happening. There's been all this disinformation and misinformation, and the field that I've committed my life to, the press, has not done its part, and it's very sad. The political system, the governmental system, has been just unregulated. It's just an outrage. Now you can get to the, you know, some people think, well, maybe the rescue can be through the judicial system. You mentioned the recent Supreme Court decision, which allows corporations to spend all they want to manipulate the political process and overturn this important act by Congress, a law which would limit corporations from dominating our society. So again, everything is very very depressing. But there's no choice. I mean, things have to be done. It's like 1938 or 1939, and here are the Nazis, and here's Hitler rising. We can't just say, well, this is very depressing. We have to stand up. And I think your group, I think groups like Prevention is the Cure. And again, you can find, just go to Google and just look up Prevention is the Cure. And other activist groups, Greenpeace, or when it comes to nuclear, a group that I'm involved with, I'm on its board, Beyond Nuclear, and their website is beyondnuclear.org, or another group that I'm involved with, Radiation and Public Health Project, that's also on the Internet, Radiation and Public Health Project, which has been doing very important work in showing that you don't need a catastrophic accident, you don't need a Chernobyl or a Three Mile Island to cause the poisons that are in a nuclear plant to get out and cause cancers. In fact, that every nuclear plant routinely, in fact, the government allows it. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission allows these so-called routine emissions to happen. Any nuclear plant emits these terribly toxic chemicals getting out. What the Radiation and Public Health Project has found is highly elevated levels of cancer around nuclear power plants. It's terrible. But in any case, that's an organization that people should know about, along with Cancer Action, along with Prevention is the Cure, along with Beyond Nuclear. Another good organization on the nuclear area in the nuclear area is Nuclear Information and Resource Service. They have a website, NIRS.org. And in any case, get active, get involved, and do what can be done and must be done to deal with all this.
I hear you, Carl. And that is truly the best thinking, you know, that I've heard on this, and I honor you for that. And we're just going to keep educating and taking strong stands. And honor to Carl Grossman for all you've done. You're a great man. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
You bet. Have a great day, Carl.
Great day.
Goodbye.